Hi and welcome to the Movies You Love podcast, and I need to start this out with like a really big apology to my guest this week, Gwen Reyes, over at realvixen.com, mainly because like I had a little bit of a problem with the recording, and this episode was meant to have come out all of 2 weeks ago, but I just had so much things going on that I ended up not getting to fix it till now and post it up. So apologies to her and apologies to you guys, because you guys deserve like this stuff out quicker and faster, and me being better and stronger, and let's see how much more jokes we can make with Daft Punk in the background. I will not put Daft Punk in the background in this episode. But yeah, so this is the newest episode of the Movies You Love podcast, and we're coming to the end of the year, guys. I have been doing this for almost 9 months, and it's just kind of awesome. I'm so happy to see you guys loving the show so much, and I'm so happy to have more people keep coming on. Like, when I started it, I didn't know if I could rub 5 people together to do this idea of I'm gonna just bring on someone new every week. But luckily, I'm all the way at episode 17, I believe, right now, and I'm gonna, right now, while I'm talking, doing the introduction, instead of doing the smart thing and editing around all of my madness, I'm gonna go and check and make sure I'm at the right number in my head. Yes, this is episode 17. So this episode has Gwen Reyes from realvixen.com, as I already mentioned, and this week she decided to talk about A League of Their Own, the wonderful, the gorgeous League of Their Own, the film about the Women Baseball League in America and how it got started during World War II. And yeah, we talk about it. We talk about feminism, which we talked about in the last episode of Gravity, but I think it applies more here. It's more abundant in this film than anything else, and everything else that's going on with cinema and all of her love of baseball and watching and deciding whether she's a Dottie or a Kit. Who are you? Are you a Dottie or a Kit? But anyways, I'm going to stop talking and go into the actual episode right now. So yeah, here.
I'd like to lead you all in a little prayer. Dear Lord, may our feet be swift, may our bats be mighty, may our balls be plentiful. And Lord, I just like to thank you for that waitress in South Bend. You know who she is. She kept calling your name.
This summer, Tom Hanks is managing the impossible, the Rockford Peaches.
I'm ready to talk about A League of Their Own, which I feel so weird is like one of my favorite movies. I'm like, well, it's a great movie.
So, Gwen, you, as you started talking about, you want us to talk about A League of Their Own, the 1992 film starring many. I mean, I was even cursed by my younger brother earlier today rewatching the film that it's not Roseanne, it's Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, that's true.
And Madonna, and my brain is so garbled. And Gina Davis.
Yes.
I'm curious.
And Tom Hanks. You can't forget about Tom Hanks.
And Tom Hanks. You can never forget about the bosom buddy Tom Hanks. I'm curious. This film was released just over 2 decades ago right now.
I know, it's hard to believe.
Were you an early adopter? Were you a theatrical release first viewer?
I was. I actually saw it in I can remember exactly where I was when I saw the movie. I was 9 years old when it came out, and my mom and I went to see it, like an early showing in the middle of the day. I don't know why. My mom's not a big movie person, but I think we went to see it together at a theater that is no longer a theater anymore, but then was turned back into a theater. So, as weird as that sounds.
So, it's right now it's a theater.
It is. Yeah, it was closed down, and then it was demolished, and then they, on the ashes of that demolished theater, they built a new fancy theater.
Is it a good theater?
Oh yeah, it's a very nice theater.
Oh, sweet. That's
but it
that's
was nothing like the one I saw it in.
Okay. You say your mom isn't much of a movie watcher. Did she love this movie? Is she a fan of this one?
you know, I think she enjoyed it. I think it has a really nice message that moms really enjoy, which is, you know, the power of girls and that they can kind of stand up against the obstacles by themselves and with teamwork and stuff. So I think it was one that she tolerates more than other movies that I forced her to watch.
Oh, it's nice to know that mothers can tolerate films every once in a while. I know I have trouble with my mom and movies sometimes, but I still get her to like movies. It's just
a surprise.
It's always a lovely surprise. So tell me a little bit about that first time watching the film with your mother in the theater. What was it that kind of just grabbed you at that stage in time at the age of 9 years old?
I think it was like the whole experience of like getting to spend time with my mom was really exciting. And now I spend a lot of time with my mom because we work together. But I also, I just loved the whole experience from the moment when it opens up and Dottie and Kit are playing baseball together and you see John Lovitz just kind of come and watch them. And he's just such a funny, funny part at the beginning of the film. And I walked out of that movie wanting to play baseball, which was funny because I had just entered softball that year for the first time. And so it was, I just wanted to become those girls. And it was just very inspiring for me. 1992 was a very exciting movie year for me. Like, I saw a lot of movies that I loved that came out that year.
Yeah, I mean, 92, it was a weirdly interesting year. I mean, I was only about 6 at the time. So I don't think I was really heading to the theater on a weekly basis going, come on, guys, let's go love movies. But when I look back, like just looking through the list of films that year, it's kind of like the 90s had a special kind of filmmaking, storytelling kind of thing where it wasn't so much like what movies coming out today are, where they feel so purposeful. Or maybe it's because I'm spending more time understanding what movie making is doing as a business. But it feels more like how I think about what they were doing in the 70s with filmmaking, where they were allowing people to do some crazy things if you knew exactly how the market played for you.
I totally agree. And it's funny because I remember when I was in film school a few years ago, and we talked about, like, my favorite genre is melodramas. I love melodramas. And it's interesting is at the beginning of the 90s was this period where we were getting the woman's film, and you were getting a redoing, like the self-aware female melodrama was coming back into vogue. And so you had like A League of Their Own was one of those, and How to Make an American Quilt and Little Women. And these are films that to this day are still ones that resonate with me because of whatever sort of, even that young, I don't think I had ever seen movies that really focused on women doing things other than just being moms. And that was a very exciting thing because I don't think we see movies like that now.
Well, I mean, you talk about movies about women just being moms, and this movie, while it definitely has that girl power kind of feel to it where women are kind of like, yeah, we're gonna show people that we can still do stuff. It does also have that sort of motherly quality to it when you look at that relationship between Dottie and Kit.
Yes.
Even absolutely. Though it's technically sisters, so it kind of works out regardless. but I mean, I'm kind of curious, like, how is it that kind of touches you as it being a movie that you shared with your mother?
I mean, that's a really interesting point because that was one of the reasons at the end of the film that Dottie decides she wants to leave the league is because she wants to go make a family with her own, with her husband and move on and everything. And Kit stays behind. And I think that relationship between Kit and Dottie really was exactly like you said, Andrew, of this sort of, mother daughter, even though she was like the big sister sort of thing. And I think Dottie wanted to mother. And that was kind of why when Jimmy's a drunk earlier on in the film, she takes over running the league or running the team because somebody had to do it. And it's a combination of leadership, but also a little bit of mothering, nurturing. And it's interesting because I didn't grow up with I grew up with a brother. I didn't have a sister, but I always wanted that sort of brother or that sister relationship that Dottie and Kit had.
Did you want to be the Dottie or the Kit?
I think I wanted to be the Dottie, but I was more of a Kit. I was younger and I was a punk and I thought I knew everything and I thought I didn't need my brother to take care of me. So I always identified as Kit, but always wanted to be Dottie.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Nobody wants to be Marla Hooch, though.
It's kind of crazy to me that while this movie will allow itself to make those pejorative jokes when we see Marla for the first time, even in the charm school moment of the woman passing Martha, the weirdest thing to me is when the movie reaches its end and it returns to the present and we see everyone grown old, that when Marla appears, you would have no idea that she was ever to be considered to be not beautiful or even ugly, to say something like that.
Yeah, I wonder if that's because, like, Marla goes through such an interesting arc where she really is this tomboy, and her story is so tragic, because I remember even being a young kid just finding it so sad to think about growing up without a mom and this father not knowing how to take care of his daughter. So he's just like, I'm going to think of her as a boy. But then she gets to become like this ugly duckling that blossoms into this swan and finds a man that loves her, and she can do the thing she gets to do. In a way, she gets to have it all. She gets to go back to the team the next year, like we assume that, and then she grows into this like beautiful matronly woman in the future, or in the present time.
Yeah, there was one thing, and I guess it kind of dawns on, it kind of is a question that most people kind of bring up with this movie, and it being a film about women who are supposedly taking a place that will put them in the spotlight of everyone. This movie does something kind of weird in that many people will take away from this movie not just the fact that women were given this chance and they did this amazing thing, but at the same time, within the context of the film and the film story itself, the film almost gives all of the most lovable and adorable and just outlandishly great moments to Tom Hanks playing Jimmy Dugan. And I don't know if anyone can argue whether that is a mark against the movie and what it's trying to do, or whether it's just the fact that Tom Hanks just has to win every scene.
You know, it could just be something about the acting, you know, like, it's one of those things where is it the writing or is it the acting? And I think that Jimmy Dugan is one of those performances from Tom Hanks that is just perfect. You know, there's some movies that you watch a movie and you're like, that's Tom Hanks. Whereas I feel like in A League of Their Own, that's Jimmy Dugan. And yeah, he does steal every single scene that he's in. And when you think of A League of Their Own, you're thinking of Tom Hanks and not Gina Davis or Lori Petty or even Madonna. You're thinking of Tom Hanks throwing a glove at Sitwell and, you know, yelling at Shirley about that. And I think that's just, it's funny, but that makes it such an iconic film still.
It's weird that while, like, thinking back to this movie before I rewatched it recently, one of the highlights that I always remember is there's no crying in baseball, that famous scene. But weirdly enough, when I was rewatching it this time, I spent more time noticing the encounter that he has with Shirley towards the later half of the movie, where after he's had that moment of shouting at her and the umpire coming over and say, talk to these women like they're all your mother, you know? He has this moment where he's almost ready to do the same exact thing, but he just kind of pretends, like, thinks about it and just doesn't know what to say and just gives her this odd look, and then it ends up with, do better next time.
Yes, exactly. Like, he learns how to talk to them, and I think that's so funny. I think that's such an interesting, it's such a fun argument about, like, women in general. Like, men change because they spend time with women, just like women change because they spend time with men. And that's such a great way that Jimmy goes through his change of, like, accepting the fact that this might be his second chance and that he's got to be nicer to the people that he works with. And it's just, it's so funny. I remember that scene too, because he just, like, uses his finger and then he's like, do better.
So I'm going to do something kind of strange. Well, I shouldn't say it's strange, but I didn't think it would be happening this often, but two episodes in a row, I'm gonna ask the question of feminism within film, and especially within this film, because there's something that I noticed with this movie, and you can stop me and tell me how wrong I am as I go along, because I only know so much and I accept criticism. This movie is about women who are asked to take a role that a man once had, which is what they were asked all throughout the wartime, only mm-hmm. because men went to war and we needed someone to fill this void. And it's no longer factory work. It's no longer enterprising businesses. It is baseball, an entertainment industry that is a superfluous element of society. It is all about just giving the world a distraction for all of their things that they don't want to think about throughout the day. And the movie begins with a criticism of society laid on the people from women, in which they say that the masculinity of women is happening in society to the detriment of society because mm-hmm. they're asking women to take on this role. Is it bad or is it good that we end up in a world where the women are changing the men to conform to a female sense of the world? Or are we asking ourselves that the women can't take on the same world the men did because it doesn't stay the same way the men do, as we see with that moment of Jimmy Dugan, there's no crying in baseball to do better.
Yeah, that's a really, I mean, that's such an interesting thing. Cause I do think this film has so many feminist notes in it, because it's almost one of those films that's like the feminism just hits you over the face. But it does have those underlying issues of the world is different at the end of it. Like the world is different. And these are women who, just like Rosie the Riveter, are not going to go back to the world they had before that. These are now modern women, and modern in the sense of then, not modern in the sense of like the modern world we live in. And it's hard to think about that, because I think that would have been way too hard to ask those men, those men coming back to not accept the fact that these women have changed. Like these women are different and they have to move with the women at the same time to get to the place that they can both be equal. And that's like a dream. I mean, there's the hope that that's possible, but of course there's still going to be very single-minded people that come back from the war, no matter what side it is, and expect that the gender roles stay the same. But it's a fun exploration. And it's funny that 20 years later, that's the film still brings up issues that I think are still relevant today.
Yeah. I mean, these things are going to be points of discussion for a long time, because even if eventually we all get to a point where we're all no longer talking about it in a current feel of like, this is a problem today, and we're now talking about it in the past, we're still going to be talking about it. We're still going to be bringing it up. We're still going to be discussing what it meant to us. Mm-hmm. And things like this, these don't necessarily serve only as historical record, but also as almost an emotional history in what it felt like at that moment and what kind of discussions we had at that moment.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting with Dottie and Kit and their relationship of, I think that they both represent like that, the world looking at this thing of being like, you can never go back home. Like Dottie is old school. You know, she's going to go there. She's doing it because Kit wants her to. And yes, she's the best player in the world, but you know, at the end of the day, she gives it all up to go back to this gender normative world with her husband back on the farm, to allow him to be the man of the household, to do whatever. And Kit sets forth in her new life as this modern woman who is going to work, and she's going to make her own money. And she's, you know, she's going to get married one day, maybe. But, and we do see that she does get married in the future, but she doesn't want to be back in that old world. And that was one of the things that stifled her. But what I always thought was really interesting is that their relationship at the end of the film, as they're older, you can tell that they go years without speaking to each other, that as close as they were at that one moment in their life, they would never be that close again. And it's maybe because their ideals are so different, or it's because their paths have taken them to something else, but there's still an underlying inability to relate to each other that causes them to have a broken relationship for the rest of their life.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm gonna keep on this very feminine idea for a moment.
Okay.
As there are so many other elements of this film which touches on what men decide the feminine world has to have, or at least what the world requires to allow for a feminine side of the world to have a light shone on it. Shone, is that a word? Shined. I'm kind of getting lost. But my brain thinks like this, and I will not apologize for it.
No, you just you.
The first note that I kind of have is about the sexualization of baseball to allow for the female league to work. Because while they started going around the world with John Lovett, not around the world, around America, with John Lovett trying to find players, we saw that moment of going, all right, you need to be able to play baseball, but more than that, you need to be pretty so that we can sell. Then you have a moment later in the film when the game still isn't selling and they don't know what to do. So they start to say, you have to do something exciting. And what's exciting? We need to see Dottie do a split as she catches the ball. We need to hear about May thinking, what if my breasts pop out in the middle of a game? That'll sell tickets, right? You think about the moment in which the organizers start to have a promotion to say, if you catch a foul ball, you'll get a kiss from a girl in the field. You know, It's still in that feminist question of, is this the world that women had, not just, I'm not asking if they had to tolerate, because obviously they did, but is this a world that men still look on what they expect if we shine a light on the female world?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's like one of the smartest things in the film, is that it was really using this moment to shine a light on what the women had to go through in the 40s of, yeah, you had to be beautiful, you had to be really athletic, and you had to be able to sexualize and keep the entertainment factor going. Like, it was this whole around entertainment where it was men, you know, think about the big famous players. It was like Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio. They're not very attractive. Where you had these women that had to be beautiful and be just as good. And I think that then the film reflects upon the modern society of, that's still the same. Like, you still have these actresses that they never change ages. If you think about it, it's not like the actresses themselves don't age. It's that once they hit a certain age, you cycle them out and you get a new person. Whereas the male actors can act until they're in their 60s and still be considered sex idols. And I find that to be such an interesting thing that is still so prevalent, and it's still such an important part of the entertainment world, no matter what it is. Like, you can't have somebody like Lindsay Vonn, who was hopefully going to the Olympics, but for skiing, but she probably won't because she got an injury. She's beautiful and she's an amazing world-class skier. And you'd think that the person that would really be a great skier it wouldn't matter what their faces look like, but it does, because you have to sell the image, you have to sell the Wheatie box, you have to sell the games, you have to sell people wanting to go there, because you have to sell the fantasy.
But it's kind of strange to me, thinking about something like a simple example of football, and for those listening who do not understand my version of English, you may call this sport soccer, and that will be the one time today that I will say that word. In the game of football, I think it was somewhere in the late 90s when women's football got a big surge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
They went to the World Cup. And there's this traditional thing with celebratory goals where people take their shirts off, right? And it's been perfectly fine forever, because everyone's been watching male football forever, and we don't care to see a man's abs and his chest and whatever. And the women followed suit, and everyone let it go at the time. But literally the next year, there was a regulation put in place to state that it is no longer allowed to remove your shirt during football. And it was carte blanche, male and female, because, of course, you could no longer be seen as sexist today. How dare you? So now every time I watch a football match and a goal is scored, and in the moment a man has the gall to take his shirt off and run around and celebrate, he is given an obligatory yellow card. It's it's questions, it's things like that today where you can see the media purporting what morals are onto the world due to our own weird morals and understanding of the image.
It's very interesting too, because I think that because men still make a lot of the choices and decisions in many, many industries, especially the entertainment industry, I do think that that's very interesting that the shirt removal was made a carte blanche amongst both sides, both genders. I think that that's very, it says something. It says a little bit about like, oh, we're trying to make the playing field even, but also we're afraid that somebody might get offended. And that's, I think, worse, that like you're, men and women have bodies and you can have a shirtless man, but a woman with a sports bra on is way more offensive and titillating. But it was really not. I mean, any fan would just be like, all right, they were just really excited and or hot, you know, like physically warm. And that's a really, it's a sad thing. And I think that that's not going to change anytime soon.
Now, I'm just kind of curious, bringing it to you, since we've talked so much about the sexual sides of the story, male and female, I'm curious as to what else, other than the general girl power and the feminist and the gender roles of this movie, do you kind of take away walking out of it? I mean, it's an interesting film, at least, but I'm kind of, I don't want to lead you any further. I want to find out what you're real biting into with this film every year in.
Oh man. Well, I think it's also like, it's just a really great sports film, which I think is such a great American tradition in American filmmaking that we have, are these really well done sports films that the game acts as a metaphor of like you're changing in life, you're coming of age. And I think that it's also because of the time period that they choose to focus on, you know, the summer before World War II is over. I think that that's it really brings this moment of like historical commentary, but also this world of like bridging between the old world and the modern world. And that's a really interesting thing to explore. And as I've gotten older and moved past like these are women that I want to be like because I want to play baseball to, these are women who now have so much ahead of them and have no idea what's going to happen. And their decisions are going to be shaping a country in a way that they may not have shaped it before. And I think that still, for me, it still comes down to the feminist issue, but I also think it's a really great sports film. And it shows the game really beautifully, and it shows a really nice modern female friendship. And the love story isn't important either. And I think that that's always really important in comedies, is that you're always thinking that there's a love story in there. And I love that there's really not a love story between Jimmy and Dottie. Like they keep their relationship strictly professional as two people coming together from opposite worlds, having to work together to do something really great.
But at the same time with that, you can see that if there was even half an inch of chance, Jimmy Dugan would take it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, I thought there was the chance when they're on the bus and they're sharing a soda together. You know, I always was like, are you guys going to make out this time? And they never did. They have yet to make out in my multiple viewings of this film.
Do you still have hope every time?
Every time
you hope that there was some edit gnome that came into your house and dropped a different version of the movie?
It's so true. And it's sad then, because then I get so excited when I see Bill Pullman because he's such a babe. And so I'm like, man, I'm so glad you didn't cheat on your hot husband with a bum leg.
Yeah, I mean, that sniper, god damn him. One thing that I kind of spend time looking at is the comedy of this film, because there all of the comedy, it seems to come from the male side of the film, because the rest of the movie just is that love and friendship relationship and baseball, right?
Right.
Every male character, every prominent male character within this movie is just there to insert comedy, from John Lovitz to Tom Hiddleston? Because he is the new Jimmy Dugan in my mind.
Oh my god. Let's reboot A League of Their Own.
With Tom Hiddleston as Jimmy Dugan?
And I will play Gina Davis's character.
And you will make out with Tom Hiddleston.
And we will fall madly in love. And it'll be delightful for everyone.
And you will cheat on your hot husband who comes back
from
the war.
He'll die in the war. It'll be real sad.
Oh, are we writing fan fiction right now? Is that what we're doing?
Yep, mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to spend the rest of my day doing.
I don't know if that's what I want to do right now. I feel like I've done something bad. But is it something weird that the comedy that this movie is billed for seems to come entirely from the male side of the movie? Or am I misreading the female side?
You know, because I think that Rosie O'Donnell, I think Doris is pretty funny. But I would have to agree that, like, Dottie and Kit are definitely not, they're straight characters. They're definitely not the comedic characters, and the comedy's definitely not coming from them, because the comedy is always about Tom or Jimmy reacting, like his reactions, and he's like this lovable drunk clown. And then I see that the other women, because they're definitely not used as comedic, they're taking the whole thing very seriously, and that's why I think the film, I think if it was to really go farther into the comedy realm on the women, it would lose that dramedy sort of women's film sort of vibe that it needs to have. But it is unfortunate now that I think about it. I'm like, it would be really funny to see the girls besides Rosie O'Donnell being a little funnier.
Actually push the joke, you know? There's the moment when Jimmy Dugan first enters the club, enters the dressing room, and he just he walks past all the women that tried to say hello, and he goes straight to the urinal. And he just goes
then,
at it.
You know, but then May takes her, takes the watch and times them.
And, you know, it's just this moment of me going, so now that we've had all of this female femininity coming into the movie, you know, we've gone through getting these women, we've gone through charm school, we've gone through tryouts, we've gone through all of these steps. Finally enters Jimmy Dugan into the world of feminine, and he just brings in the worst of male nonchalant lewd into this world, and we're just like, yeah, that's fine.
It's actually funny. Yeah. Or, you know, or him yelling at oh my god, I always forget her name, Evelyn is her name, of yelling at Evelyn about her kid and like the whole there's no crying in baseball. I mean, like, that's the funny thing to me is that the line that is the most iconic from that film does come from the mouth of a man. And it's about the man's reaction to everything going on around him.
Yeah. Last thought that I kind of want to bring in, because it's something that I kind of like to dive into, is the idea of how this actually changed your viewing habits. You were only 9 at the time, so I'm not quite sure whether that really changed your viewing habits. But what was it that you took from this movie, or was it that you looked for in every movie following that this movie actually defined for you?
Well, you know, I think it's really funny is because when the movie came out on video, I bought it. And it's back when it was a VCR, so you had to fast forward through trailers and stuff. And I just remember wanting to watch every single, so I had that, and then I watched every single movie that was advertised by that. By the film. And I found myself diving so far deep into these like very sad, melodramatic women that have been put upon stories. Like I said, of Little Women, Fried Green Tomatoes, Terms of Endearment. And I was discovering all these films that had similar themes because of either based on the advertising put with the film, or because I liked this and I just knew how to navigate around a Blockbuster, and I would spend my summers working at my uncle's video store, and I found these films that were all very similar and all dealt with the same themes. And that's something that I've kept up now 20 years later that I still gravitate towards. And I feel that it did change my viewing habits, because before that I was watching a whole shit ton of cartoons and animated films. And this was a movie that really opened my door to, opened my eyes to the fact that there were movies that were about women and about girls, and they were real rather than just like silly children's films. So I think it was like that bridging of, you're no longer a kid, you can now watch adult films, and these were the adult films that I was watching.
At that time, did you then discover that there was such a thing as the Lifetime Channel or Hallmark?
Well, see, those are not the same type of films. Those are ridiculous. As much as I enjoy a good Lifetime movie, I'm always like, these are so not the same.
Oh. My happiness in life will come when someone listening to this realizes how meta I made it when I, as a man, tried to make humor out of lessening the female genre of a movie.
Yep, I appreciate that.
Anyways, I don't think there's any... is there anything else you want to bring up that I haven't specifically pointed to about this film or about your...
Well, actually, I wanted to talk about the fact that they tried to turn the movie into a TV show the year after it came out.
Actually, I had just discovered that, and I've never seen the television show. I have no clue what's going on with that.
I have never seen it either, and I'm like, oh my god, I have to go find. I'm now on a mission to find the really shitty TV show that it's that spun off from it, and like what happened and how they could make it into a TV show. And I'm like, man. I gotta watch that now.
And you see, the weirdest part about it is that this is done for a good amount of movies. I mean, especially if you go into animated series. Mm-hmm. But the only other movie I have in my mind, which I think it would be more ridiculous that they actually did this for, but it didn't actually succeed. They only made a pilot and it didn't go to actual air, was they made one for Blazing Saddles. And I've seen that pilot only because it's on the Blu-ray I bought for that movie. So it's the weirder part is that for this movie, the TV version, they actually did a whole season, I believe. So
they did, yeah, like 6 episodes or something. I mean, they did at least half a season.
So I don't know, what do they chronicle the second season of the All-American Ladies League?
I'm not sure, because the thing is, like, they have a character in it named Dottie, and they have a Jimmy Dugan. So I think that they actually remade the whole movie into a show, and I'm like dying to see it now.
Wow. Maybe Dottie is just a friend Kit calls on the phone, so she just gets called up in the show.
I don't know. It's just a voice. That'd be so funny. I know. I just saw that when I was looking through the IMDb and was like, what? Must find it.
Yeah, you have to find it. I await your report of how great the All-American Ladies League Season 2 is.
I'm sure it's just delightful. Oh, so funny. So ridiculous.
Anyways, I'd like to thank you so much for coming and talking with me.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm sorry. I'm glad. I hope that our feminist conversation was enjoyable.
I didn't manage to get uncomfortable, so we're all right.
Good. Excellent. That means good. Equality. That's good. That's all we want as feminists, is equality with both people.
And that'll be it right there. Wow, we've actually gone almost 40 minutes. That's crazy.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Oh, is it weird that the only thing I've written down and I didn't talk about, there were two things. There was my considerably amount of bafflement, if that's a word, I'll allow it, that they have a qualification for playoffs in a league with only 6 teams.
Yeah, I know. That's just weird. There's a lot of weird stuff in, like, just general wrong sporting stuff in it. You're like, why do you... No, that seems weird to
like,
me.
The movie makes it feel like this is a 9-month season, but it's...
Yeah, and it's like 6 weeks.
You'd imagine it could only be 6 weeks or something like that. Oh, man.
That's why I think it's so funny. It's such a nice little nugget of time. Like, time feels so intense during that 6-week period.
And that was the episode. I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank Gwen for coming on and talking with me. Gwen, you're awesome. Anything else I want to thank? Oh, I should tell you guys that, as usual, you should listen to the podcast over at gmanreviews.com or through iTunes. If you're there, go and subscribe. Go and rate. Go and review the show. I love to see those reviews up there. I've seen a couple, and it kind of just makes me happy. It makes me shed a little tear, a little podcasting tear, and I love it for that. I'm on Twitter. I'm gmanreviews. Gwen. She's at Real Vixen. Thanks so much for listening, and good night.
I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand warm like the month of May it was. I'll say it was grand. It was grand to be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, feel your touch, hear your voice say I'm all your own.